Right.
Hello, hello. This could be a really small, intimate group, or we could get more takers. We had 12 people who registered, so we'll see what happens. Robin, are you with us?
Yep, there we go.
Oh boy, my goodness, that picture looks just like you. What a great, that could be your picture. Exactly. It could be you right now. My picture looks completely different.
Except this is a picture of me on vacation, and this is what I look like in the middle of the work week.
not so terrible.
A little different.
Not so different. I'm not sure everyone knows everyone. So I am going to just do what I always do, which is welcome you, introduce myself. You know me, the Chief Program Officer here. And this is our mid-size agency exec group. And Don Goldman, the CEO of JFS of Kansas City, is your chair. And he'll take it from there. You guys, right. I know where you both are. Just put in your communities, Delaware and East Bay. I guess that's not so difficult to remember. But in case new people come on, they'll want to know as well.
Yeah, good. Well, welcome, everyone. I'll repeat this later. I know Lisa found out yesterday. I'm going to be retiring later this year. So this won't be my last call though. So I won't retire before August. So we'll at least have another call or two and before then.
And you'll see everyone at the, in Dallas.
Yes, I will.
Powering it.
Mm-hmm. I will.
Well, congratulations. That's huge news and really great.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's good. It's good timing. Lisa and I were just talking about, for all of us, it's like you have to finding that right moment when it's, you know, when it's the right time to go, when you're in good enough shape and you know, and there's not some other crisis that it feels weird to leave in. But
do you have big plans?
I have two grandkids I had last year, and my wife retired a few years ago, and she has been like lobbying me retiring partially so we could travel more and do things, and partially because she thinks the last few years have been really hard, and she thinks we could all use a break. I was telling Lisa, I have a friend who he's been a consultant for years, and it's wonderful. Like he was 40 hours and then he was 30 and then he was 20. And now he just takes fewer clients. And it's like, wouldn't that be lovely if we could just cut back to one or two days a week, do what we do, but these jobs don't lend themselves to that. So anyway, yeah. So how are things for, do you pronounce it? Renna.
Mm-hmm. Like Renna, but with an R.
And Renna's practically an old hat now. She's been here, what, 6 months?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think we've ever met. I remember there was somebody who was interim in that. So
Regina.
Yeah, I don't think
Regina was interim for a lot longer than she anticipated. And then Basha was prior to her, and Dori Zatuchny was a longer term person,
right?
For like 25 years.
Yeah. Well, how was your first 6 months? Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say that Rabbi James Green just came in. I've never met him before. He's new. He took Maxine's job. He's now at JFS of Western Mass. Well, he's now everyone, the new CEO, I should say. But everyone knew Maxine. Hello and welcome. And we can't wait to hear a little bit about you. So he is the newest person here now, Renna. can't always be the newest. So yeah, continue talking so Don can get to know you a bit, I guess, or whatever you were going to say.
Yeah.
Who, me?
Yeah.
I have no idea what I was saying. I've just been here since the end of July, and it's exciting. It's taken me, you know, some time to get my feet on the ground, and we are recipients of a very large federal grant, like $3.5 million grant to develop mental health licensed professional social workers for the state of Delaware, which was big news. But we have, so outpatient behavioral health is our biggest program, and we have a large refugee resettlement program, and then a number of other support services type programs and medical work. So I just put out an RFP mid-December for strategic planning with a strong market analysis component, environmental scan. So we are just beginning to, this week, the end of this week, questions are due. So it looks like we've got about 7 or so inquiries from different consultants. So I'm very excited about moving into that process. I think they've done a form of strategic planning in the past, but it's been a very, very long time if they've ever done it with a market study component to it, which I think is going to be really important. So it's kind of dovetailing with a pretty in-depth program financial analysis that we're in the process of doing. We set up the budget for 2023 so we can really do a deep dive on programmatic health. And the idea is that once we get the market study in, we'll have some program analysis done. And when we see needs throughout the state, we can look at maybe replicating the programs that already exist when they're in a form of, you know, better financial stability. So that's the kind of stuff I love doing. So I'm excited about it.
That's cool. Just so I know, is your federal grant multi-year?
It's technically it's 1 year, but there's we could not spend $3.5 million. So the practical answer is it's a 2-year grant. The technical answer is it's a 1-year grant and we have to ask for a 12-month extension.
Got it. Well, we can go in the order of what sounds like you're coming in to do a huge amount of stuff. So you're going to keep yourself busy. Rabbi, it sounds like you wouldn't have met anybody here, I'm guessing.
No, I don't think I have yet.
Met yesterday.
Oh, that's right. Karen, hi, how are you?
Good to see you.
Yeah, I have one friendly face.
All right.
Well, when did you start?
Hopefully we're all friendly.
When did you start?
I started January 1. So, wow. So I'm brand new.
So do you want us to call you Rabbi?
I would prefer James, you to call me James.
James.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate you asking. I prefer James.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, how are your first 10 days, James, of 8 days, 9 days, whatever it is?
Yeah, you know, it's been a little bit of a fire hose, but it's been fantastic. I mean, the JFS here has such an incredible portfolio of work, and I have been in this community for seven plus years. And so I spent, I worked at the JCC and partnered with JFS in ways over the course of those years. And so so for me, it's really a pleasure and a privilege to be able to step into this work and to continue the good work that Maxine has done over the last number of years.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Well, welcome.
And you used to be a Bay Area person for a while.
I did, yeah. I was at the JCC in Palo Alto, or in Los Gatos before I came out to this part of the country.
Yeah.
But I, more importantly, I grew up in the Midwest and went to college in Kansas City.
Oh,
my goodness!
Wow, you've connected.
You're touching us all.
Yeah. Do you know Amy Walk?
Amy Walk is my rabbi. And so I'm a member of her synagogue, and actually my parents worked professionally in the Jewish community in Kansas City for a number of years. And my mom, Alea Shalom, worked with Amy, at the JCC there.
Yeah. Cool. Anyway, well, that's fun. I am just we're a small community, a small world, aren't we? This is a rabbi who was in Kansas City and now in Massachusetts. I'm actually taking a Melton class with her online in starting in a couple of weeks.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Cool. Great. Robin, how are things with you?
Things are okay. I'm actually wondering, James, if you've met your colleague in Hartford, Katie Hanley.
I know of Katie, although I haven't met her.
So Katie and I were in this Leading Edge program together that just ended, and she's fantastic. So
nice.
If you you should just connect with her directly, but if you'd like my support in that, I'm happy to do it.
I will reach out to her and let her know that you suggested it.
Yeah, great. Well, none of our offices have flooded, I should say, and that means it's been pretty good here in the East Bay. But it's been a little bit hectic with all the rain. Yeah. And we haven't yet heard of any major mishap with any of our clients, but we're of course checking in on them. Everyone is dealing with some sort of something. It's not that we are not in the part of California where there is massive flooding, thankfully, but certainly for the older adults in our community, we do lots of check-ins. So that's what's on my mind today as it started pouring again right before this call started. Mm. And there was a lot of exciting hail yesterday, which is unusual for California. It does happen once every few years though. So we are really focused on our growing work around immigrants and refugees. In just in the last year and a half, we've settled over 1,000 Afghans into the East Bay, which is the number one Afghan community in the United States. So we're still trying.
Is that because they came to you because you had open arms, or
because it's the largest established Afghan community in the United States, and a principle of refugee resettlement is family reunification. So
what was the number you said? How many?
Over 1,000.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. Mm. And we had actually just done some homework, and we think previously that since we have been keeping records with HIAS for the past several decades, we've resettled over 500 people before this past year and a half. So so it's really big. The other thing that's top of mind for us is we've been putting a ton of energy into staff development and infrastructure development. And we just brought on board a system that you may be familiar with called Culture Amp. It does employee engagement and performance management work. And we have plans to do 3 times a year, different kinds of staff experience surveys on different themes. And we just got our results back from the first one. And so we're diving into that. And that is really good, important work. So I'm thinking about that too.
How did you hear about Culture Amp? Was it through the network?
I had used it in the last organization I worked in, and which was in public media. And it turns out that our local federation also uses it. I just found out this week. But it's a useful tool because the user interface is pretty friendly, and it tracks data, and it can benchmark more globally. And it links the engagement surveys. It's the same tool that also you can utilize for performance management for individual employees. And
Minneapolis uses Culture Amp, or Detroit. I think one of our, I've heard them talk about it. It seems like it could be a good tool for, a lot of agencies. We'll look into that.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we're happy to connect you all with our HR person who's implementing it. But another valuable piece of it, I think, is that it has a library of resources about strong workplaces, and it has a good, it's not designed solely for nonprofits, but it has a a good nonprofit base of clients, and so it knows about what's happening in the nonprofit world.
So. How does it connect to your overall HR system, where you probably do some of these things, or doesn't it?
Well, I love how you presume that prior to this, we had an HR system, Don. we had folders and Word documents and things like that. So in the past 6 months, we've brought on this system. We've also brought on ADP as our payroll and electronic timesheet system. And we're also implementing a new electronic health record and universal case management system. We're using Penelope. We had a really big tech debt when I arrived, and we're chipping away at it.
I see.
And a human resource debt. So Step by step, we're building it.
Yeah, I'd love to hear. Go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry, Robin. I'm just curious how your staff is handling all this new stuff. Sounds like it's all happening pretty quickly, and it's a lot to, you know.
Yeah.
Take on.
Well, we also things,
and how are you managing that, the change?
I have a great COO, and he's in charge of managing it, and I let him do his job. But we also have done some general IT upgrades. So when the pandemic hit, there was a huge need for some tech leapfrogging because nobody in the agency had a laptop.
Wow.
And like, you know, half of our staff works in the field and none of them had a laptop. So, so they had already been on a path of tech infrastructure upgrades, but we, there was no like internal messaging system, no Slack or Teams or anything, when I arrived.
Wow.
And no one
that
was
working. during 2020 you arrived?
Yeah, okay. I arrived December 2020. And so people had been working for many months, not coming into the office at all, except for a few finance folks. And they didn't have any tools other than email to communicate with each other and phone. So so we've been doing, to answer your question, Karen, we've been bringing in a lot of new tools and systems. And there are two things that we try to keep in mind. One, three. One is the role of staff in the system selection. Two is to make sure that there's a person who's in charge of being the administrator who you can go to if you have a question and who's guiding the process, right? Because we had an electronic health record system, but there was no one running it. Like, and so it wasn't, so everyone thought the system was bad and then they just hired people to work, do the workarounds as opposed to keeping the system working. You've probably heard a similar story from 1,000 different places before. And then the third thing is a working group on how to effectively utilize the tools, right? So with a focus on human-centered implementation. And then making time in all staff experiences for trainings and a lot of one-on-one handholding.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, but people were at a breaking point frustrated that they didn't have the tools that they need. And we still have that trouble. We don't have a CRM that's for the whole agency that holds different pieces. So we have decent tools for donor and volunteer communication. But we don't, and so we're building it, right? And so it'll help us also move into some of our bigger strategic goals around integrating our client experience, because we'll now have an opportunity to have a universal intake form, for instance, which we've never had before.
When you say you're building a CRM, is that through Penelope or through something else?
Well, no, what I said was we don't have one. And you assume that meant that we would be building it. We're going to get these stages set up first and then see where it leads us. But Penelope may be our solution for that. But right now we just have to, we have to get to the basics of accurate electronic health records that everyone knows how to use.
Got it.
In there?
Do you want to know of any other agencies that are using Penelope? I think we may have a list of those.
Yeah, I think we do already have that, but I'll put Jonathan, our COO, in touch with you if he's looking for more information. So thank
you. Were you guys looking for a payroll system? I can't remember.
We were a while back. We decided to go with ADP.
Okay.
And yeah, it's been pretty good. And so that's, you know, we're actually using ADP for our recruiting and hiring side as well. We've turned on that feature. So that's another way in which we've picked up another HR system.
Yeah.
Not boring around here.
You're doing, you know, it's kind of funny. You almost make me feel a little better about the progress. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's just like, you know, we had laptops and I mean, we had, you know, we didn't have a messaging system until the pandemic. You know, we had Teams, we implemented Teams, I think during 2020, but so it's not unusual, but it's just like you have the full gamut, right? You have everything you've been working on. So, you know, one thing you'll find, I think, and see if others feel differently, is I came from a background in telecom where there were a lot more integrated systems, that you could have a single system that would do all the different sides of the business, and it would be a front end for, in our business, there's just, you have to deal with multiple systems. There's just no way around it. And complete integration seems almost of all the systems on the donor, volunteer, and user side seems something that they're just not good solutions for.
Well, I'd love to hear if there are tools that people absolutely love or things that have really worked. The other really big thing on my mind, and then I'll move on, is our mental health clinician hiring is just so, so challenging and painful.
Because of salaries and what you can afford to pay, that sort of thing, or
the flexibility. Yeah, and to just find applicants.
Yeah. There's not enough of them.
Yeah.
To meet the demand. Yeah. I mean, that was the impetus behind our grant.
It's great, Rena.
To hire the master's level folks. Well, I didn't do it. I just get to take credit for it.
Go for it.
It was all done before I came on board.
But I think it's amazing. And so just so we know, back to your grant, Rena, it's not like funding. It's funding them. It's coming up with a process to be able to train them or pay them more, or,
you know, it is, well, and I think I misunderstood initially, because I was thinking that we would be creating a process that could be replicated, but the bottom line is,
so did we.
Insurance companies don't, you know, won't third-party payers for master's level people, with the exception of maybe some Medicaid contracts or Medicare. So people graduate with their master's in social work, have a minimum of 2 years of getting supervision and enough CEUs to qualify to sit for the licensure exam. And they have a hard time finding a job where they can do actual therapy. So they end up getting a job at a nonprofit like us, but we end up giving them jobs as caseworkers, which is not doing therapy. It's a different skill set. I mean, you might have some therapeutic skills built into it, but it's not doing therapy. So they can get some supervised hours, but, you know, basically people who need mental health services don't have access to those master's level people. So what this grant does I had longer conversations with Basha, who was my predecessor, who wrote the grant. It's really it's giving us the money to hire these master's level people. And it's paying for them so that we can have them do therapy. So we've got them partnering with a number of different agencies, you know, like a community center in downtown Wilmington that has a lot of clients that could use mental health services. So we put a therapist there on site, and they're supervised. And the grant also gives us money to bring in specialized trainings so that they can get their CEUs. But the object was to graduate over a period of time 20 new therapists that are licensed in the state of Delaware, and they are agreeing to stay at least 2 years to work in the state of Delaware for a nonprofit, and ideally we would be able to hire them. And because what I was saying to Basha was like, well, that doesn't really fundamentally address the issue that insurance companies aren't reimbursing for master's level people. And she says, no, that was never the intention. I said, well, what are we doing? Why are we doing this whole study on how this works? Because the bottom line is we still need the money to pay the therapists during that period of time. And, you know, they're not going to get the intensive training and supervision unless we have the money to pay them to do that. So it's just basically just fast tracking them, because a lot of therapists end up taking 4, 5, 6 years because that's how much time they need, because they're paying out of pocket to get the clinical supervision, out of pocket to get the trainings if they're not available at a place of employment, before they can sit for that licensure exam. So, you know, it's not exactly what I thought it was when I first was introduced to the program, because you're still, like, when this grant is done, I was saying to Basha, well, would it be renewed? And she goes, no, that wasn't the point. The point was to inject the state of Delaware with 20 new fast tracking, 20 new therapists.
I got it.
So the fundamental underlying problem of licensure limbo land still exists. And, you know, and until and unless we can figure out, well, the new legislation that just passed has expanded at least to allow other master's level degrees, you know, more LPCMHs to be reimbursed. So it doesn't have to be a master's in social work.
Right.
I mean, last time I was doing this work was in like the late 90s when managed care just came in.
Professional counselors and licensed mental health. Family.
So you can be, I mean, like I said, the last time I was doing this work this intensively, I was running a nonprofit also in Delaware that did primarily mental health. And when managed care came in, we had a staff of, I don't know, let's say like 14 therapists, and half of them were either master's level social workers or PhD level psychologists. But the other half were MEDs at counseling. They were marriage and family therapists. They were art therapists. They had these other degrees that were made them perfectly competent clinicians. But all of a sudden, people wanted to use their insurance, and insurance companies weren't reimbursing those degrees, right? And that and here it is, however many years later, and it's still an issue. It's still a problem.
Well, good. By the way, I just, so I know, I don't know if others, I personally am interested because we're doing something that's not quite the same, and it's not $3 million worth. It's, you know, with a fund or a couple hundred thousand to create a, like a director of interns to, for our own purpose, to create training and build our own therapists that will stick with us because we're doing the training and licensing. So, but yeah, anyway,
I think from that perspective, some of the things this program is doing and the way we're setting it up, I think it will definitely be helpful because it does talk a lot about creating a pipeline,
right,
and working with schools of social work, and, you know, how to develop the therapists and what kinds of things they need, and, you know, how to develop those partnerships and all of that. It's just,
yeah. So I don't want to sidetrack all of us because it's just, but I'm going to reach out to you because I want to, I'd love to get the information of just doing, because I said what we're doing, and I don't know if others is, it sounds like we all have the same, those of us doing mental health, I'll have the same issue about staffing is, and paying for therapists when reimbursements, it's not just for us insurance, it's, and then I'll move on. It's also the community government funders are paying at a rate that is no longer a reasonable rate, right? So, and we're trying to communicate, but they are moving too slowly.
Well, and they, I just heard that they, you know, they had jacked up the reimbursement rate for Medicare over COVID, and now they're decreasing it by 5% over a period of 2 years.
And
so, like this year, the reimbursement rate's going to go down 2%, and then next year it's going to go down another 3% to land it back where it was pre-COVID. But yeah, the insurance reimbursement rates haven't increased for forever. Like, who's holding the insurance companies accountable?
Right. No one.
Yeah. Well, let me keep us moving. And, you know, by the way, the point of the call was to, and but I actually, we're doing this organically without us. I don't even think, you know, Lisa, we need the poll. I mean, we were going to, we talked about some of the, just to remind people, we, you know, had the issues, and I'm sorry, I missed the session in Arizona that came up as the top issues. But what's interesting to me, I've been listening to the call, and then Karen, I'll turn it to you about like top issues. We're actually talking about these things, the list of the, you know, dealing with growth infrastructures, dealing with culture in the world, you know, systems and
funding to sustainability.
So, yeah. So we are actually moving among these things organically without us polling, which just says that that was the right list you all developed, those of you. And so now I'm going to send it to you, Karen, just talk about what, which of those are your issues?
All of the above. And our biggest issue right now, and I think some of you knew we were heading down this path, but it's official now. We are a new highest affiliate for Resettlement Services. which is how I met James yesterday, because we were checking in with them to get some expertise. We were a Hyas affiliate for many, many years, and then, but haven't been for the last 18 years. And Hyas reached out to us, said they were going to make a change with their local affiliate, and asked us to consider doing it again, and got an enthusiastic response from our board. We've been working with refugees, providing employment services. So we already have a team in place that is, you know, from all the different refugee communities. We've got all these relationships and everything, but still, it's been a wild roller coaster for the last couple of months of last year, as we were doing community outreach and pulling together our application, and it got submitted right before the end of the year and got approved by the State Department within a week by the federal government during the holidays. Wow. So way faster than we expected. And Hyas is encouraging us to start welcoming families as soon as possible. So that's a little nerve-wracking, because we want to make sure we do it really well. But they've had this pent-up demand over the last few months as they were severing ties with the prior affiliate. So we're hoping to be working initially with people who have family ties here, so that it'll be a little less of a little less heavy load. So
it sounds like Robin knows what to do.
I think lots of folks on this call have experience or are gaining experience on it. So I think we're going to be relying heavily on our network counterparts. For those of you who are in Arizona, I feel like people were like afraid to see me coming at them, because if they did resettlement work, I was targeting them and like peppering them with questions to just figure out some of the logistics around. We're going to have to change some of our policies around. We have a policy that staff can't transport clients. So that is changing. We got to figure out space issues and partnerships, and housing is the biggest one. But one of the really exciting things that's come out of this is conversations with some local real estate developers, many of whom are from the Jewish community, and an organization that finances low-income housing. And there may be some opportunities for us to be part of some exciting, like, low-income housing development, which I don't know that we would have been in that conversation before, but we are now. So
I think it's great. You didn't want to rest on your laurels. You have been going since you have gotten there. That is for sure. And I guess that's what, 3-4 years ago? I can't even remember, but you've just.
Yeah. You know, I've been here 5.5 years and been CEO since June of 2019.
So that's when you started really running. I was just going to say, in my community where I live right here in Northern New Jersey, there is a large apartment complex, and like right across the street, sort of. And it's not that large, but it's an apartment complex that a Jewish developer gave to the JFS so that they could resettle Russian Jews. This is back, 35 years ago. So, when you're walking in the parks around here where I live, you always see all these, less so now, but senior Russians that are there sitting, talking in Russian in the middle of the winter, snow, whatever, with their babushkas and whatever, all their clothing on, just talking on the benches in the parks. And their children are basically my age, and, have a lot of friends that are Russian because of this person who, donated his apartment complex to the JFS. So I think there is potential out there for you. And now that people are potentially dying, it's going back to the market. That was the deal. So JFS doesn't have control of those that are going back into the market. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just think that's an interesting model that I'd never heard of before. So that's it.
Oh, cool. Well, that sounds like more than enough, Karen, for your beginning of 2023 to to work on. Congratulations on that, and good luck. And it's a great long-term. We don't do that here. JBS does, and we're separate. And there are a lot of times I'm okay with that because people work hard, but it's a great thing. And funders and donors are, oh my God, they're like so interested in that area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maya, do you welcome? And we are just reminding people, the topic of the session was what we listed out, but honestly, we are hitting that organically, as I mentioned before. So we're just sharing what are the big issues you either want to bring up or talk about with the others and get feedback from the group.
Hi, Happy New Year. Sorry, I was a bit late. So I maybe I'll come at it differently and share with you sort of what are the big things that I'm sort of, that, you know, that keep me up at night. Many of them were already, I caught the tail end anyway of a number of things that you all said, which resonated with me. So for us, we are in this moment where we are sort of no longer a small agency. And now we are, I guess, maybe legitimately a mid-size, and not just by, you know, NJHSA's definition, but maybe even by our own. And, you know, heading into year two of the implementation of our three-year strategic plan. And the biggest issue I have, which is, it's the best problem to have, I have to tell you, but it's really concerning me, is that we can't keep up with all of the things that we aspired to do. Mm-hmm. We have funders breathing down our back. This is such a good problem to have. Again, basically, you know, asking us what's it going to take from us for you to go ahead and make this happen. You know, they want to throw money at us and have us do the things that we think would make sense to do, or maybe some of the things that we didn't, but they want us to think really out of the box to do. And I just, we can't get, you know, when you're on like a subway, I don't know, we have metro or subways here in Montreal, and you better be, or a bus, and you better be holding on, because as soon as that train leaves you, you know, if you're not well grounded, mm-hmm. you're going to jerk and fall over and land on someone's lap. That's how I'm feeling. I'm feeling like, like every time the train starts to take off, because every time we think we're okay, maybe today's the day that we start looking forward, we get sucked back into just putting out the fires because people are sick. Or staff are dealing with, you know, like just the staffing. Anyway, I'm just rambling. We're in a good place. We're growing, and we just can't catch our breath long enough to actually institute and implement the growth that we want to do and that is expected of us and that we've committed to do. That's our issue.
Yeah. Well, to be more specific, and it's fine. I mean, you're probably bringing up issues that resonate with everybody here on staffing and others. What specifically is it? If you had to pick the one or two things that that really are the issues that are meet, you know, that mean that you're not, you know, that you're not getting things done, is it keeping staff and hiring staff, or that staff are out sick so much that you have schedules? Because I know we had that for the last few months. It's like I felt like I was substituting for half the leadership jobs because people would be out for not a week, but 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And
I would say it's that more than the first thing you mentioned. It's much more about you know, the domino effect of people being out and you know, this whole new reality where if you have a sniffle, you're encouraged to stay home. But and I'm being a little dramatic, but maybe not that much. And so people are out a lot because there's so much that's going around, because we've been so protected for so long that now that we've taken off masks and we're living a little, like everybody's getting sick and it's not always COVID and it's all these other things. So that's keeping us right. Exactly like you said, everybody's filling in for everybody else. I'm worried about burnout. I'm worried about the impact. And then concurrent with all this is the normal stuff of an agency that requires growth and that requires investment and that requires forward thinking. But I can't do that because I can't even keep people from burning out on the day to day. And so it's just balancing that, but it's largely related to HR, Dawn, just to address your very specific question. It's largely impacted by the HR realities that I think are more of a post-COVID thing than before. That's yeah. kind of where we're at.
So did you read, I'm sure you, like you have plenty of time to read that, but remember that real-time record that we finally sent out in January? Were you able to read that? Because I know you weren't able to go to the ExecNet, Maya.
Yeah.
So if you looked at that, all of these issues that we're talking about, there's the challenges that we're all discussing.
Yeah.
Line and the solutions, and then people who have implemented things that potentially could be something that you could benefit from talking with them further about. I don't know. I just think that everything that you've said was addressed in the way that we could address it at ExecNet. So, you know, there might be some tidbits or nuggets for you.
Yeah, something useful from there for sure.
Yeah.
Thanks for flagging that.
Yeah. I just because we have, I have felt it in the last few months. It's interesting. I thought we kind of started the year and like everyone is getting together and we're doing more in-person meetings and healthy. And then yesterday we had an in-person management team meeting and three people were remote. I mean, which is fine. We're getting good at hybrid meetings, but because somebody was hacking and coughing and somebody else's kid was sick and just so, but that's at least they're working. They're, you know, sick, but they are doing their work and they're able, it's not as good as being there, but it's not a big deal versus what I was seeing in a few months of the year is people being significantly sick. I mean, not COVID, but RSV. I had a staff person who was one of our, who had RSV, COVID and pneumonia at the same time.
Oh my. Gosh.
So, and was out for 10 days and then trying to work their way back to work, but only could work part-time and somebody else who had major issues. So I just seen, you know, a lot more of that. That is not just they're staying home, but they're able to work remotely. They're just,
yeah, we don't have a remote option really because of the fact that we are, sort of an on-site, a manufacturing firm, let's say that, you know, that provides adapted employment for adults who have disabilities. And so we don't really have an offsite option. There's a handful of us who could, if we needed to, we do administrative roles, but everybody else, if you're not in, you're not working. Right. And never mind the financial impact it has when we can't, you know, meet deadlines for packaging. That's not even on the radar at this point. That's the least of my worries. It's more about, and then I guess also the morale issue, because then that affects like, we're never here. We're never fully staffed. We're never doing what we're supposed to do. Like, this is so hard. I feel like I'm burnt out. And it's a domino effect. So it's rough.
Yeah.
And it's not insurmountable, but it's challenging.
Yeah. Can I ask, and this probably is not much for you, Maya, because most of you have to be in person, but for those that we have a little bit of a culture issue for those who can be remote and can be sick and do their work versus those who can't. And we have a little bit of resentment. Our food pantry people are like,
oh, yeah,
we always have to be there and we're there. And that's just the job. I mean, you can do it versus, you know, my finance person, if she doesn't go in, it's okay. We are completely set up remotely and can do all that. And she can be fine. Do people see the cultural aspects of that, of the resentment and how you deal with that? I'm kind of interested.
I mean, from my vantage point, stepping into the agency, I can tell you that there are two sides to it, at least as we're experiencing it here. One is certainly there are folks in our work who have to be here, right? Case management happens in person or in homes, and it's something that can't be replicated online in the same way, at least not with the same kind of ease. And so there is some of that. I think the other thing that happened is that we experienced a tremendous amount of growth during the pandemic. And so as people came back to the office, there was crunch for office space. And so there's that push and pull now also about case management or behavioral health or New American programming and who gets sort of the valuable real estate of being on site versus who needs to be remote or work at a WeShare desk or something like that. So I think we're experiencing both the cultural challenges of who can be here and who needs to be here and who can be offsite if they want to, and the consequence of what it means to try to bring people back to a space where the staff has not quite, but nearly doubled in size over the last 3 years, and what it means to have basically the same amount of space in that office.
Others?
Well, I was actually just going to say that to your question, that we have the opposite of what you spoke about, because when we need to close down, when we have like sometimes snow days, like imagine like a school has a snow day. So we have that once in a while. When we do that, people are either sent home or not called in, and they're not impacted, like their salary is not impacted. So they'll get paid, right, for even though they don't come in. But those who can work from home are expected to work from home on a snow day. So for us, it's the opposite. And there's the resentment. That's a hard thing to manage too.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like we've given up snow days because we had 2 days in Kansas City. I was actually on vacation. We went remote because there was like winds and blizzard and stuff, but no snow days. Even the people who work in the office have to do something. They frankly have a light day. But anyway, Linda, sorry, I want to make sure we have time for you.
I'm sorry I was late.
Yeah. Just see what you want to, if you want to talk about any of these things or something else you'd like to bring up in our last section of the call.
As I listened to everybody, there are just so many similarities that we're experiencing, and it's helpful to talk about and, maybe brainstorm a little bit, but, the resentment about people who can be out of the office. And there are people who tend to not be wanting to play as much on the team, like they just want to be left alone to do their work on our in leadership positions, and it causes some bad feelings and frustration, because since we are back in the office, we moved during COVID, so we have new offices now. We were homeless for about a year.
Bigger offices, Linda?
Yeah, where we moved out of the old ones, and and they were building out our new ones. And so then we moved in last March. And so it's been up and down. And do we require people to be in 2 days? Like we set something recently where we're requiring leadership to be in the office 2 days. And there are a few people who didn't really want to be in that much, and they would come in for an hour and a half and leave. And then it had to be, oh, well, they need to do 2 full days. But it's like some of us who feel obligated to be here all the time, there's just a little bit of frustration, and, it feels like lack of fairness. And, so we're struggling with that as a leadership team, how to build a team back after COVID. Whenever we have our leadership team meetings, we have to make a big deal if we want everybody to come in. Otherwise, we're half on Zoom and half in the office, and it's not the same interaction. Like if you're all on Zoom or all together, it works. But this halfway where, we have equipment to see the room where we're present, but it's not the same face-to-face as if everybody's on Zoom. So those are some of the things that we're experiencing too. Although I was just saying, we had a lot of turnover in the last 6 months or so, and it's great to have new people. They come in fresh and enthusiastic, and they're the ones who want to be in the office. They have little kids at home, a lot of them, and they don't want to be working from home. So the turnover has created sort of a breath of fresh air for us, and the people who are in the office are feeling really nice about it. But there's still that division on the leadership team that is frustrating.
So that's a big one. How are you managing that? Like, who's having a mediation or a conversation or whatever you want to call it?
Well, there are layers of it. Oh. So there is one of our vice presidents who supervises four of the people, where two are very collaborative and two are not as much wanting to, they just want to do their own thing. Mm-hmm. And so she has brought in sort of a mediator, somebody who works on our talent management for the Federation and also does work for us. And so they're sort of trying to build their team back. And that's like about a third of our general leadership team. So that sort of feeds in to the rest of it. Mm-hmm. So we are addressing it individually and as a group. And
I think they need to go out to a Thai restaurant and have some nice drinks.
There you go.
I'm talking. Linda and
you
I
know, that's been really helpful too. Exactly. Like we have, especially the new staff. And everybody, you know, I know we talked a lot about the need to have fun and, you know, schedule in things. And once we finished the build out here, so I was consumed with the build out for, you know, till, I don't know, midsummer. And as my time has opened up, I've focused back on, you know, food events and like I'm planning, we're going to go do a tour, field trip. We're planning to the, there's a Holocaust museum in town and, you know, we serve Holocaust survivors and we're close with them, but the whole, and the staff is just really excited about doing these out of office stuff, happy hours, lunches, but you know, like the Friday before New Year's, there were a handful of people in each of our offices. And I just said, everybody, let's meet for lunch. And I took everybody out to lunch and it was so nice. I mean, it's so important to do this stuff. And
it
I don't
sounds
know
like Linda is the director of fun.
I am. I am. Although
God
I need to
hire the director of fun. You missed that meeting.
I at our staff meeting yesterday, I said, I'm very lonely in this job and I'm looking for people to join me. And I did have a couple of people step forward. And I, the way I presented it, I said, we don't have to do this ongoing committee, but just come to me with an idea and then go plan it. You know, and then you can take a break for 6 months and then somebody else should plan something and we'll go do that. We don't have to like plan out the year and be.
But it is anyway. Important what you're saying.
Yeah. So anyway, all those things that you guys are experiencing too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's today. And what Rabbi Green was saying. And Maya, we have our funders are so interested in our growth and supporting everything. We have never been so well off. I've been here almost 23 years. We have never been in a financial position that we are in now. And they and people are saying, oh, this new program. Oh, yeah, JFS should do that, too. And so trying to keep up with the growth for that is a challenge, and you don't want to turn it down because if it fits under our mission, it is something we should be doing. We're talking about doing adult day now, adding that to our portfolio. It's just a lot. Yeah.
Is Anne ready for that?
Anne is, yes.
That's great.
We have a space. Actually, there's an empty office space within our building that we moved into that they're sort of holding for us, but one day they're going to come and say, we need to rent that out. If you guys can't get off, may, you know, get your funding in order and pull this together. Although it could happen in the next month that we get the go ahead for everything.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, this is good, good discussion and lots of issues here. Do people for as Lisa and I think about the next one, obviously, this was just sort of the organic and we had the list. Would people like to pick one or two? Sometime last year, we picked just an issue on fundraising, just talked about that so we could really dig into that and then people could go into one issue. Or do people like this kind of round robin? Because you kind of, I like this in some ways because it's like some issues that I have and now I know some people that I can reach out to. Do people have some use. Thank you for reminding us of the next date, Lisa, about whether you'd like to focus on an issue. Is there something you'd like to drill into, or do you like just this catch up every few months? Don't all volunteer at once. So.
What do you think? Some groups are, you know, round robins, what's going on, and some groups are much more focused on specific issues, bringing people in, having you talk about something specific. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
This works for me personally. I'm always interested to hear what everybody's kind of dealing with. And it's a little bit of like in the moment and real time. I'm interested to know how many agencies are represented by this particular segment. I know there's 6 or 7 of us here today, but
we had 12 sign up for this group today, but I guess things came up. But I can tell you that right now, actually. Yeah, I just have to get on the database. Mm-hmm. So what do other people think?
It was a long laundry list of topics, and I was looking at it going, I wish I knew what we'd be talking about because I know whether it would be helpful. But then I also like the organic nature of, you know, the conversations and what comes up. And I always take away a little bit of tidbits here or there. So I'm conflicted, or I'm embracing both, however you want to look at it.
Maybe we do a combo this year. I mean, if there's something people wanted to talk about, like we've talked a lot about staffing and HR and systems related to that, that has come up some. And so we could do some things where we do, like in the fundraising, we did 1 or 2 case studies last year, and we could have a couple of us present for 10 minutes and just say what things we've done so people get an idea or choices in something. We could just send out a poll before and then, you know, decide or do still a couple of these round robins this year too. So we, over 3 or 4 sessions, can kind of do both. People want in March to keep it as a round robin, or would you rather like us poll and see if Lisa and I can come up with what the issue would be and then see who might present on that?
I think the poll is valuable only in so far as, and I Rena kind of touched on it, to know in advance what the topic is might actually lead some people to be more inclined to attend if it's something that happens to touch, or the opposite might also be true. Like, oh, that doesn't touch me, I'm not going to go. Mm-hmm. I have a colleague here who I asked if she's going to be participating in the disability one. And she says, well, I missed the last one because the topic didn't really speak to me. Right. But the next one, the topic speaks. And I know from I often go on the Wednesday CEO check-ins and stuff like that. I realize that sometimes you don't think it's going to touch you. And every single time I walk away with that, at least one tiny little nugget of something. Sometimes it's bigger than a nugget and sometimes there's many. So I love the value of the networking. But topics could either help you get people there or drive people away.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing about topics is that, I mean, part of the reason for the group, I would think, is kind of shared thought leadership. And I could look at it and say, I got that down pat, I'm not going to go. But maybe there's something that I've done that could be helpful to somebody else. And right. So you don't want everybody showing up to be looking for answers and all the people that have the answers not show up. So
that's true, I mean, too.
Yeah. Well, if we pick a topic, we could also reach out to see who is strong on that might want to present. Right. Like, I've just handled this and implemented it. All right. Well, I don't know if we got a definite answer. Maybe Lisa, you and I can talk and we can almost plan
the whole year,
or at least as much of the year as I am here leading. But we can plan the year and whether I lead it all or not.
We'll find someone else. But don't forget, you guys, to mark your calendar 5, 7, and 9, right? March 7th tonight for PowerNet, which is the annual conference. It'd be great if we could see you all there.
All right. Good.
March. Is it March or May?
May.
Oh,
May,
you said
May.
March. Okay.
Yeah, well, May. March is our next meeting on Zoom is March.
Okay.
May. Yeah. So we get together in March and May, hopefully we'll all get to see, or most of us get to see in Dallas. So,
yeah.
All right. Great to see
you all. Thank you. Thank you, Don. Thanks. Thank you, everyone. And maybe
have a great day, everyone. It was nice to meet some of you all.
Yeah. Good to meet you, James. All right.
Yes. Thanks. Good to meet
you. Be well.
Bye.
Nice to meet you, James.